This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas. It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we'll share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, chewing the fat with Rex and Paul, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocals@cals.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio CALS, please visit the Butler Center's blog at butlercenter.org.
It's time for Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, a regular feature on Radio CALS. That's Rex Nelson, who is senior editor and columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and who writes the food blog Southern Fried, and Paul Austin, who is the executive director of the Arkansas Humanities Council, talking about Arkansas food, festivals, and folks.
Well, time for another edition of Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul. I'm Rex.
Rex, it turns out I'm Paul today.
Oh, are you? Where are you from, by the way?
I'm from Imbo.
I thought we'd get it out of the
way.
That's
a record, like 3 seconds. Fantastic.
I just thought we might as well get it out of the way early this time. Why wait?
Why wait? Exactly.
Why wait? Oh, well, what a fun summer it was. Now the school year started and we're getting into fall, but we did make it to the famous Hope Watermelon Festival.
Indeed. Our first watermelon festival of our career, I believe, is during the fall.
Yeah, I had been, but the first we'd been together.
Yeah.
And it had been a number of years since I had been. And I will be honest with you, I'd probably last been when I was working in the governor's office. And I left there in 2005, so it's been a dozen years or more.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten bigger. I don't remember it being that big, and I don't think you were expecting
it to be
that big an event.
It was like the state fair or something. Yeah. I mean, it was, the crowd was huge.
Yeah.
And the fairgrounds, is it the county fairgrounds where they hold it?
Yeah.
Huge.
It's a regional fair, actually, they have, Southwest Arkansas.
Cars everywhere, people everywhere. They were having softball tournaments and then, of course, all kinds of other activities and the normal fair stuff you would see. I was blown away by how big it was.
Oh, it was a fun day. Now, I had the honor of being the MC of the political watermelon eating contest, and our governor, the Honorable Asa Hutchinson, was there. But
didn't perform very well.
I think he's a great governor, but I just can't say much for his watermelon eating.
No, I was a little disappointed, I have to say. First of all, if you notice, when we got there and you hooked up with your people, I disappeared because I was afraid that I was going to be hornswoggled and participating. I didn't want to do that. But it turns out I didn't have to. I had plenty of political leaders of the community, including the governor. Winner was the sheriff,
I was
right?
going to say, we have to tip our cap to the Hempstead County Sheriff, who won for an eighth time. And, Paul, it was impressive, was it not?
Well,
that man can eat some watermelon.
Now, this was a slice, and this was the
full-length
slice of a big watermelon.
About a fourth of a watermelon.
And I'm saying 8 seconds, 8 or 10 seconds. It was unbelievable.
It's like a machine just kind of
went
he barely beat
the prosecuting attorney. They were old veterans. Of course, he was just covered in watermelon juice and seeds now.
And being the good MC, I tried to interview him right afterwards, and he was a little choked up after all of that.
Yeah. Not from emotion, but from inhaling a watermelon. Now, how much he actually chewed and swallowed, we probably shouldn't get into.
Yeah.
I think there could be some
residue around him on the ground.
Maybe, yeah.
As his teeth went back and forth.
It was literally like an old typewriter. Boom! And the governor and the old, who's the state senator, Senator Teague.
Yeah,
they had a fork and were, you know, bite by bite.
They were at a ladies' social.
Right. Yeah, that was, and it was hot, too.
Oh, it was watermelon weather, let me tell you.
But then we got watermelon.
Yeah, they had a big tent there. You could buy watermelon and, you know, I know being a Northeast Arkansas boy, you said you were from Imboden, right?
Imboden, Arkansas,
okay,
right.
Just want to clarify for our listeners.
Yeah.
But just being a Northeast Arkansas boy, I know you kind of gravitate toward those Cave City watermelons, but this was good melon,
this
wasn't
was good
it?
Melon. And lots of it, too.
Yes.
No, they were great melons. I was, I don't know that I'd ever had a Hope melon before.
Yeah.
And what we had were the small ones. They only weighed about 60 pounds.
Exactly.
We had an interesting adventure. One of your former high
That's
school teachers.
My former high school biology teacher, Lloyd Bright of the famous Bright family. Yep. You know, they've held the world record on numerous occasions. They don't hold it right now, I don't believe. But they have held the world record on numerous occasions for the largest watermelon, more than 200 pounds. But he had three of his big melons there on display, and he was one of my favorite teachers, and maybe I was one of his favorite students because he tried to give us one of those watermelons.
We thought
and
he was
Paul,
kidding.
At first we did think he was kidding, but then he took the price tag off of it.
That's right.
Said, load this up, and I owe him an apology because we didn't come back because we couldn't figure out how to get it into your truck without you and I being bedridden for a few weeks.
We were going to have to carry it
there.
For a mile to the truck.
And then what to do with it once we
got
it to
what?
The truck.
And it was over 150 pounds, wasn't it?
It was at least 150,
Oh, my goodness.
More. It was one heck of a watermelon.
When I could see that our hemming and hawing, he was not giving up, I walked away. I'll let Rex handle this. But, well, we'll try to come back. He said, I've got a burlap sack. You boys can grab each side and just carry it. And I thought, there's no way I'm doing that.
We were parked
then
a long way from the exhibit, and you couldn't drive up to
now,
that building.
Rex, would it have been good to eat that big, you think?
He claims they are, yeah.
Still early.
He tells me they are. I've never cut into a 150-pound watermelon.
That's a lot of melon.
I've got to admit. But we left it there, so hopefully the Bright family found a good use for it. But he still runs a website. I wrote one of my newspaper columns about it. And mainly grows them for the seeds now. Apparently, watermelon competitions have become big things all over the country. And Bright seeds are very well known. And so people mail order and call him for orders of those seeds.
How
so
funny.
He mainly grows these big melons for the seeds now.
Well, we saw him in sort of reminded me of the State Fair's Hall of, as I like to call it, industry.
Yeah, it's called the Coliseum there. Yeah.
Just full of booths of things. Mm-hmm. And I got pecan brittle from some local folks. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it. Now, I was actually proud of us. We had melon, which is very healthy.
Very, very healthy meal. Now, well, we did go on to lunch afterwards. But before I got off of the watermelon festival, the other neat thing about it that I had kind of forgotten, that basically every farmer who still grows watermelons to sell them in Southwest Arkansas is lined up on the highways as you drive in there. You've got a lot of selection.
We got some melons. Yeah, sure did. Five or six of them that we saw just, what did he call them? Select.
Yeah,
I think he said select.
Uh-huh.
And that's the one I got, which I've already cut into it, and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Very tasty melon.
Yeah. So we can highly recommend that event to anybody that's never been, or if you have been, go back next August.
Now, as I told you, I was a little nervous about the melon because we had had a full breakfast that morning. We didn't talk about Keeney's.
Well, we've got to go back there. We've talked about it before, but we – of course, Paul and I needed some sustenance if I'm going to have to run my mouth as the MC of this watermelon eating contest. So we stopped at what is, I think, become our favorite breakfast place, and that's Keeney's Grocery in Malvern.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
We had, they don't even give us a menu. What do you want?
No, we're regulars now.
Two eggs over easy and biscuits with gravy, and we got fried potatoes with onions. Mm. It was just beyond delicious.
Oh, yeah.
And then Mr. Keeney came out, and we couldn't get away from him. And he gave me kind of his secret recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
Which included...
This was the biscuit recipe,
this is the biscuit recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wanted to talk about it more, but, you know, we had obligations. But it included flour, sugar, and yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So I've yet to incorporate that in my biscuit-making research, but I'm going to try putting some sugar and some yeast in the biscuit. Because his are fantastic.
And they're done in an iron skillet.
In an iron skillet, and the fried potatoes are not evenly cut. Someone's cutting them up with a knife.
No,
onions.
You can tell those aren't from Cisco.
No, they're not from Cisco at all.
Yeah, no, somebody cut them up with a knife back there. Probably him at about 4 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yes,
that's exactly right. Yeah. We asked his daughter, I believe, was the waitress, was he on vacation? She says, no, he never takes vacation.
we wish he did. They said they wished he did. But he lives right next door, though.
Yeah.
This place has been in business in Malvern for decades. It's on Mill Street in a residential area.
Yeah, right.
And surrounded by houses. But they serve both breakfast and lunch. And you hadn't had lunch there.
I haven't had lunch.
We'll have to get down for lunch one day.
I think Jan went with the Rooks, Steve and Connie Rook, that live in Malvern now. I think they went to lunch there. And, in fact, we ran into the friend of theirs who's the executive of the chamber, I believe. Mm-hmm. So we can't go anywhere, Rex, without our fame is statewide.
It's absolutely
unbelievable.
Absolutely. And unlike the previous time we had talked about this, back earlier in the summer, it was not Brickfest this time. So
right.
There wasn't quite as big a rush at Keeney's.
Not as many people.
Saturday
yeah.
morning.
The help was not as harried as they had been the last time we went.
So you got to have breakfast at Keeney's twice this summer.
Within almost like a month. Almost.
Wonderful.
Purple Hull and then this one.
Wonderful.
Watermelon. Fantastic.
And then, of course, even after that big breakfast, due to the exertion of calling the watermelon contest, then having to eat some watermelon. Of course, we needed lunch, so we went out to historic Washington State Park and went to the old Williams Tavern there. And I have to tell you, I'll tip my hat to my friends over at the State Department of Parks and Tourism, because you think of a state park and maybe a concession place, you're thinking more of a concession stand, really,
right.
or a burger
yeah.
or whatever. If there's better food at any state park in the country, I'd be surprised than
too.
Their lunches
it's,
there.
It's just wonderful. And you know, you can get a fried bologna sandwich there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Country specials.
Just good overcooked vegetables, which is exactly what you want. And I don't want my green bean crisp. I want them done. I want them cooked at least for an hour with bacon grease and salt and butter.
Yeah, exactly.
That's green beans.
That's right. That was my daddy. You should not have crispy green beans.
That's exactly right. Potato chips can be crispy, not green beans.
Yeah, and the ham hock to bean ratio is about 50-50,
50-50, exactly right, yeah.
About as much meat as there is beans.
I like to put a little onion in my green beans. Mm-hmm. It's hard to put too much stuff in your green beans, I think.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
This was a really good lunch.
They do a great job there. Of course, the only problem that I had, and I think you'll agree with me, there's a disturbing trend out there of these people from Nashville who are obsessed with their football teams. What do they call the scrubbers?
The scrappers.
Scrappers.
The scrubbers.
The waitress, or it was like.
The waitress was a scrapper, of course.
She was Professor DeBlack's high school student.
Right.
And wouldn't quit. Just went on and on.
Oh,
about
I
the
said
scrappers.
Had to listen to it over and over. Yes.
That's right.
we had to put up with that. But the meal was well worth it.
It was worth it, and it was a late meal.
Trying to make excuses now, Paul.
Make excuses. That's exactly
for having
right.
a big breakfast and a big lunch. Yeah.
And watermelon in between.
Yeah.
And let me just say, back on the melons, I would say the slices were at least 2 feet long, wouldn't you?
They were huge slices. Yeah.
And you felt compelled to eat all of them.
You had to.
Yeah. So we did.
You had to. Now, historic Washington State Park, again, one of my favorite places of the state, of course. I'm from Arkadelphia. I'm from down in that neck of the woods. And used to take my mother to the Jonquil Festival down there every
March. Is Washita Baptist in Arkadelphia?
Yes, I believe it is, as a matter of fact.
I want to make sure.
Pretty good football team this year, by the way.
Can we listen to it on the radio?
Yes, you can, on about eight different stations around the state. Just happens to be the largest radio network in NCAA Division II, but that's another story for another time.
Yeah.
But
and perhaps another station.
Exactly. Great state park, though. And one of the things, you and I went down there when the State Archaeological Survey was digging one summer. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we most enjoy about that are the giant trees. You've got that biggest magnolia in the state sitting there. But then the Catawba trees, which
gotta
are
be,
150 years or older.
At least, yeah. They've got to be record-setting. You know, what is the book? Is it Champion Trees of Arkansas?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I don't know where the biggest catalpa is. But
well, I'll have to look that up.
There's some huge catalpas there.
Yeah.
And lots of them.
Oh, yeah. They're everywhere in those old yards.
Yeah.
The homesteaders actually planted those for shade, and they are everywhere. And I ask you, and you confirmed, like any good Arkansas boy, that you have fished with catalpa worms before.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Now, for you city types that listen to this program, those are the worms that tend to get on catalpa trees and eat the leaves. If you sometimes you'll see a catalpa tree almost bare in the summer.
In the summer, that's
right. And the reason is the worms have eaten all the leaves at that point.
We used to
fish. But they get big and they get fat, and brim love them.
Love them. And, you know, the probably the sweetest catfish in Arkansas come out of the Spring River. I don't know if you knew that or not.
And is that near Imboden?
Runs right by Imboden.
Oh, okay.
It turns
out.
Just and you know, back when we were little, we didn't even know what an artificial lure was. You had worms and bugs.
Yes.
And catalpa worms were really actually prized
because
there weren't a lot of catalpas up in there. But these, I'm assuming these were planted by the early settlers. I don't know that.
I think they were. And I hate to get overly scientific on this show, but I will point out, you know, a big old fat catalpa worm, and you step on him, the goo is green because of all those leaves that they've been eating.
Green goo.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
But apparently those brim and the catfish love the green goo. Yeah.
I think that's why the Lord gave us worms.
Yeah.
With green goo in them.
But we did not gather any catalpa worms.
No, we didn't.
But we did.
We have a great
not
museum
only have
there.
Lunch, but we read some displays. We did a little humanities research,
course,
shall we say.
Great little museum.
Read
there.
Some of the exhibits. I, of course, could not get out without a book. Paul, you were supposed to stop me from that.
I knew that was
my disease.
Happen. You put it back three times. I thought, no, he's doomed. Now, I'm forgetting who was mad. Were you mad or Tom? They didn't have your book for sale, or they didn't have Tom's?
No, they did not have my book
Yours,
for sale.
That's right.
Instead, there was nothing but boring old Civil War books by Mark Crist and Tom DeBlack. Almost covered the whole thing. Shelf over there.
Well, that's because nobody's bought them. They need to.
Yes, exactly.
Who wants to hear about that old stuff? But, yeah, books. You had to buy a book. Always get the books. You got one on, actually, on the sawmill.
I got one on a guy that was a timber magnate in that part of southwest Arkansas and in east Texas and north Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And I always have found, being from the Piney Woods, the timber industry to be very interesting, and actually a book I didn't have. So actually ended up reading a lot of it that night when I got home.
Now, is Melissa going to read it?
No, she doesn't know it's
there.
Doesn't
know it exists, exactly.
I kind of put it underneath those newspapers I'd also bought.
Well, of course, Jen nor Melissa listen to this show, so let me give you some advice. I discovered something. How to
get books in the house?
Here's what you do.
Okay.
Order on Amazon and get one for Melissa, too.
Oh.
That's what I did this week.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm hoping. What is this? Oh, honey, I got you a book.
I bought you a book.
What are these other for? Well, that's something else. So I'm going to try that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So there's always a method there.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you ever actually in the Book of the Month Club?
Well, my mother was, yes. Oh,
absolutely.
I was
at one point. Yeah, exactly.
The Month Club.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever was. We used to get
And if you didn't send in the card soon enough that you didn't want it, you were getting it
You were getting it anyway.
It regardless.
That's right.
Yeah. Most of them were pretty good.
Pre-Amazon,
obviously.
In the 80s, we may have done that as well. Now, my parents were a part of the Reader's Digest condensed books.
Mm-hmm.
They still got a lot of those. And I read those as a kid.
Yeah,
I don't know how they do that. They just butcher these books up, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Gone with the Wind in 20 pages.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You get the gist of the thing,
at least.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got out of there with a book, but just one.
Yeah, it was
just
not bad.
One.
Yeah, not bad.
And then we decide, rather than getting back on Interstate 30 and coming back to Little Rock, Glenn Campbell had died the previous Tuesday. This was on a Saturday. We had seen the little notice that the family had had a very private, quiet burial the very next day on Wednesday. And I said, I know how to get to Delight. Let's poke around and see if we can find Glenn Campbell's grave.
And sure enough, we did.
And we did.
Yeah.
And we did. We went through Murfreesboro. Well, we went through Nashville first.
Went through Nashville.
Had to pay homage to those scrappers and Professor DeBlack and Nate Coulter and all these other famous Nashvillians that
we didn't have enough time, but we couldn't find Tom or Nate's statue. I'm sure it's there somewhere.
It's
got to
be there somewhere.
Look for it.
Exactly. We went through Nashville, then we went through Murfreesboro, then we're almost to Delight. Almost to Delight. And there's the sign to Billstown. And so I say, let's go down the Billstown Road, Paul. And down the Billstown Road we took.
Well, Rex, if you remember, first we drove through actually, I believe we call it D-Lite, and drove around there.
Like D-Queen.
Couldn't find anything. Drove down the road, couldn't find. And finally, we said, well, Billstown Road, maybe that's where it is. And
yeah, because so I knew the Campbells were from out at Billstown.
And almost gave up 6 or 8 miles down the
road. We were about to turn around. We had gone several miles, and I said, Paul, that mailbox says Campbell on it.
That's right. And we topped the hill, and there was Campbell Cemetery.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, 10 or 12 graves, maybe. And one of them was fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right by his parents. And it was very simple. Had two little bouquets of flowers.
Yeah, a little vase of actual roses at the foot and at the head were artificial flowers, but a big display that said brother.
It said brother, right.
One of his brothers.
Very simple.
Put that up. So we were able, just 3 days after the burial, to pay homage to Glenn Campbell, which was nice.
You know what? Now that I think about it, if we had taken Dr. Strickland with us, he could have played the guitar and we could have actually sang by the time I get to Phoenix.
That's true.
Poor
That's
planning
true.
On our part.
Probably would have needed to sing Arkansas since we were over there at Billstown. You know, it's got that long song line about Pike County Sandy Loam, and we were standing on the Pike County Sandy Loam at the time. Now,
Billstown is not exactly a place on a map, I guess. There's not like Billstown proper.
Now, I get home, and I'm all excited to tell Melissa this story, and she said, what is it about you and Paul and funerals and cemeteries? Those of you who are longtime listeners of this show will realize that the previous summer we had stumbled into B.B. King's funeral and were actually pretty much graveside when they buried B.B. Over at Indianola, Mississippi.
And we love the one in Greenville.
Oh, yeah.
Patriot.
Where the Percy family is all
Percy
buried.
Percy boys are there.
Walk around that cemetery. But we did find the Campbell family cemetery. And I have a feeling, because Glenn Campbell was such a big part, at least for those of us that were of age to enjoy music in the late 60s, when he really, 68, 69, were his two biggest years. But I have a feeling that there are going to be a lot of people leaving things there.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
At that grave. Now, you know, just 2 days after we were there, we learned that we had lost Frank Broyles.
That's right. Yeah.
So within a week of each other, 7 days of each other, actually, we had lost, really, and I say Arkansas icons because, of course, Coach Broyles wasn't born and raised in Arkansas. He was born and raised in Georgia. But he always called Arkansas his dream job, and he always said, I'm here to stay, and he spent the last 6 decades of his life here.
Yeah.
So there were very few more famous Arkansans than Frank Broyles, and we lost the two of them within a week of each other.
You know, when we were looking for the cemetery, I thought my first instinct, well, let's stop and ask somebody. But we both thought, let's not ask. We don't know how people would feel about foreigners coming in there trying to bother Glenn's grave, so we didn't do that. But I suspect you're right. There's going to be visitors.
Oh, yeah, and they'll be leaving things
leaving
there.
Little things.
Yeah, and guitar picks, whatever.
Crystals,
yeah.
And I don't know. Uh-huh. There's a grave in Cape Girardeau, Cape Girardeau State Park, Trail of Tears State Park in Cape Girardeau, and there's a supposed grave of a Cherokee who died, evidently. I call her the princess. All of it's wrong. But anyway, people put these things, rocks and crystals and just all kinds of stuff.
All over it,
on this grave. And every time I'm there with my Cherokee friends, they just swipe it clean. It's garbage on these tables. But I suspect there will be picks and CDs. Who knows what they'll be.
You know they will be. You know, I ended up writing a column kind of combining the two of them because, of course, Coach Broyles, his great years were in the 1960s. College Football News, in fact, did a ranking of the top teams of the decade based on Associated Press polls. And Alabama, which was coached by an Arkansan at the time, of course, Bear Bryant, was first. But Arkansas and Texas were tied for second. So we were one of the three most dominant football programs in the 60s. And then Glenn pops on the scene in 68, and he starts showing up on that edgy Smothers Brothers show. You remember how edgy that was for the times. And then they cancel the Smothers Brothers, and CBS makes him the summer replacement for the Smothers Brothers. And then they give him his own primetime show, the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour. And then Johnny Cash over on ABC gets his own primetime variety show. And so suddenly this little state that had been bleeding population during the 40s and 50s and early 60s, and, you know, we just looking for something to be proud of. Well, we had the Razorback football team, and by golly, we had Glenn Campbell and Johnny
Cash. Johnny Cash,
at the same time.
Were very big deals. And, you know, the Cash show was groundbreaking. He had his first show had Bob Dylan.
Unreal.
And was that 68 or 69?
Yeah,
maybe
been around
70,
that same period,
sure.
I believe.
Right.
But I know Campbell was 68, 69, but I think the shows were running at about the same time.
And Johnny Cash
on
was
different
the
networks.
First time the Muppets were on.
Really?
Yeah, there was a little dog or something that he had that was Jim Henson's first TV Muppet show.
And due to the fact that we are so widely traveled, we can bring you the best and most breaking news about this region on this podcast every week. Right. You have been to the Jim Henson Museum also in Indianola, Mississippi.
Near Indianola,
where the B.B. King Museum
is. Right on the banks of the something, whatever that is.
Indian Creek.
Mm-hmm. Huge museum, I'd say 20 by 20.
Exactly.
Looks very interesting.
So Jim Henson hails from this part of the country
also. Mississippi. Who would have thought that?
But anyway, I wanted to put those two together, Coach Broyles and Glenn Campbell, within a week of each other because, again, during that same period of the 60s, I mean, we were only a decade removed from the embarrassment of the 1957 Little Rock desegregation crisis and still, you know, we still had this pretty much massive inferiority complex as Arkansans and They gave us a lot to be proud of at a time when we really needed it.
Well, so our trip through Nashville reminded me of peaches. Not that we're food-centric on this program, but it is chewing the fat. But we were a little late for the peach crop.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, Rex, I always preferred Crowley's Ridge peaches. But I'll have to say the ones I got at Arkadelphia on a previous...
Which were Nashville peaches,
Peaches were fantastic.
Right.
Were really good.
And the aforementioned Nate Coulter brought me some Nashville peaches, and they were awfully good, too.
I heard someone say, they were talking about the River Market, Farmer's Market here on Saturday mornings, and they said, well, I'm disappointed. The only peaches they had was those from Missouri, Campbell, Missouri. Well, the Campbell, Missouri peaches may be the best in the world.
Really?
Yeah. They're right up there across the border in the Booty. It's out at Kennett, I'm going to say, up in
right
there.
Right in that Kennett area. Uh-huh.
I mean, 15 miles from Piggott, probably.
Yeah.
Well, they're fantastic, and they grow a lot of them up there. So we sort of claim the Boot Hill as ours anyway, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it sticks down in Arkansas.
So we had Keeney's breakfast. We had watermelon. We had, even though we didn't do the pecan peanut brittle, the pecan brittle, we saved that.
Yeah, but we had Weed's Tavern for lunch. And then,
and that was a late lunch. It was like 2 o'clock.
But then we're famished after finding Glenn Campbell's grave.
Yeah.
So we have
to. And we're emotional. Oh, that brings on.
We have to stop at the fish net out toward Lake de Grey on the way back, actually.
Which turns out they give you plenty to eat there at the fish net.
You know, I know you, we have talked about you wimping out on burger challenges and things like that before.
Right.
Now, I rarely do, but you noticed I was even getting a to-go box that night.
I'm very
after that
pleased
day
with
eating.
Our efforts. Very pleased. That may have something to do with both of us having physicals in the summer, but I don't know. But yeah, we both took to-go. But it also is, you get a lot. Plus, what do they call it? The setup?
Yeah.
Which
the setup.
Is like beans and slaw and pickles, I think. You can almost get full on that.
Exactly.
They do a great job there.
Exactly. Yeah, this is, if you get off there next to Arkadelphia at the Caddo Valley exit and you're taking Highway 7 north like you're going to the Gray Lake and on to Hot Springs, this is on your right. But it's an old standby, and they'll be seeing quite a bit of me because it's kind of a post-football football hangout for me.
Well, and of course you go by what I thought was like Razorback Stadium or something. It turned out it's Arkadelphia High School football facility. Good great.
They take their football seriously down in that part
kidding.
Of the state. Yeah.
Yeah. And our old friend Dr. Root, of
Dr.
course,
Jeff
is their
Root.
They're the voice of the Badgers.
He's the voice of the Badgers, and then he's my analyst and on Washita football, and he's known as the football doctor, as we refer to him on Washita broadcast.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul on Radio Cals, a production of the Central Arkansas Library System, its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies, and the Cals Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley. Production manager is Shelley Stormo. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Anna Lancaster and Shelley Stormo. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.